But first of all, we've got Mike Barton, who is a farmer on the western side of Lake Taupo. He farms there with his wife Sharon on a 142-hectare beef finishing property. Mike was the chairman of Lake Taupo Care from 2006 to 2009, and this group represented farmers during the process of developing the Lake Quality Legislation Variation 5. This involved Environment Waikato, Taupo, District Council, Ministry for the Environment, Tū Wharetoa, and all affected stakeholders. Mike's currently a trustee of Lake Taupo Protection Trust. So, Mike, tell us what a nitrogen cap in the Taupo catchment actually means.
Yeah, good morning, Erica. Well, perhaps to put some context around it, first of all, we were notified that there was an issue back in 2000, and it's just basically taken up until now to deal with the issue, so 12 to 13 years. At the time of notification back in the year 2000, there were 105 farms in the catchment. 101 of those were what you would call extensive sheep and beef properties. There were four dairy farms at the time. And just less than 20% of the entire catchment was in farmland. The balance was in native bush, tussock, or plantation forestry. So if you're looking to compare Taupo with anyone else, most other catchments in the country, those percentages would be reversed. You'd be talking about 80% of the catchment in farmland. What we've come to understand during the process is that a nitrogen cap is not a cap on nitrogen fertilizer. It's a cap on stock urine. The issue was in free-draining pumice soils like we have, it was the nitrogen from stock urine travelling vertically down through the soil profile, hitting either bedrock or groundwater and then ending up in rivers and then eventually the lake. So essentially a nitrogen cap for Taupo farmers means a cap on stock numbers. So I can no longer intensify my operation unless I buy nitrogen credits on a nitrogen trading market that we've established here in the catchment. But the current price for nitrogen would mean that it's questionable as to the economic value of taking that approach. So for all intents and purposes, most farmers have accepted that their stock numbers will be capped basically in perpetuity unless science can come up with some options for intensification and yet remaining under our cap.
Great, thank you. And what issues does that create for you as a farmer?
Well, again, going back to the beginning, every stream in the Taupo catchment was fenced and riparian planted by 1982. So we've had over 30 years of what you might call a clean streams accord. Many of the farmers in the catchment had won environment awards. I think our farm's fairly typical in that over 20% of the land is given over to either conservation or riparian planting. So we all thought that we'd done the right thing. We thought that we were looking after the lake. But science has shown, and we've had to accept in the end, I mean, we wanted to believe the problem was driven by nearshore settlements and batches and septic tanks, and it's like anyone, you want to believe it's someone else's problem when you're first confronted with a difficult issue. But it wasn't, it was our problem. The riparian planting that I mentioned, that has certainly helped with phosphorus and fecal coliforms. They're basically eliminated from going into the lake. But nitrogen's a much more tricky character and is not in free-draining soils anyway captured by that planting. So for me, I now have to farm not in terms of dollars profit per hectare, but my business model is predicated on the maximum dollars profit per kilogram of nitrogen leach. So that drives my farming system. One of the things that it's meant is that I've got rid of my breeding cows. Mature animals that have reached their maximum weight are less efficient at converting grass into protein, and the amount of nitrogen that they leach, given the dollars return, they don't stack up anymore. So the main farm systems change is that we now buy in weaners at 6 months of age, and finish them really rapidly. We're starting to sell them at 18 months of age, and we can't really afford to second winter them. We've had a lot of science on the farm in the last 8 to 10 years, both ag research and land care research, trying to look at ways to intensify, to increase our production, to keep ahead of rising costs under a nitrogen cap. And the reality is there's very few science-based options. Certainly during the Environment Court, I couldn't find a single scientist that would say that they could give us production increases that would match our cost increases under a nitrogen cap. And I just think that's one of the realities we're going to have to start talking about as a nation when we look at capping nutrients into other catchments.
Thanks, Mike. And given that, that's quite a good lead-in to the next question, that given the, given that nutrient caps are going to be a fact of life for farmers across the country, what lessons do you have for other farmers soon to be facing limits?
Okay, well, the first thing I'd say, that this is a really tough issue. It's probably the biggest issue facing farming in at least a generation. What we've learned is that the first thing you need to do is to really understand the science that affects your catchment. Every catchment has different soil types, different climates, and different leaching profiles. And for some, those limits will be nitrogen. For others, it may well be phosphorus or fecal coliforms or sediment. But every farmer really needs to get their head around understanding what the issues are for their catchment and what contribution their property is making to those issues. Once you've got your head around the science, you need to engage with the regional council that's involved, and there needs to be honest discussion between all parties about the economic impact of those caps. As I said earlier, most of the catchments we're talking about, farming will be covering at least 80% of the catchment, and so the economic impact, both regional and at a greater level, of imposing limits will be enormous. Don't think that this is just a dairy farming problem. As I said, we only had 4 farms that were dairy farms in our catchment. This is every farmer has this issue, and you need to work with all the other farms and farm types in your catchment. So if you've got arable or seed growers or horticulturalists or dairy farmers, you need to work together as a group and negotiate as a group with the regional authority. And I don't think that you can afford to just rely on one or two people to do it for you. You need to be involved yourself. You will need to select leaders in the process. And my advice would be that you need to select a leader that can negotiate. You need to select a leader that will tell you what you need to hear rather than what you want to hear. And there's a really big difference in this process. It's really easy to stand up and say, oh, I'm going to protect your property rights and we'll be fine. But the reality is that this is coming, and you need people that will negotiate on your behalf, that will say, no, we have a problem, we're part of the problem, but other people have got to be part of the solution. So I don't know if that answers your question, Erica, but it will take a lot of time, and in our case it was 12 to 13 years, and it was a very difficult time for farmers. It's basically giving up some of the freedoms that you've come to accept as a farmer and trading those for rights to continue to farm in one way or another. But it will change the way you farm, and it will change the way you view farming. But I think where we've been deficient as farmers to date is that we haven't made this a consumer issue. I've started, I suppose you could say, to coin the phrase that eating food is the final act in the agricultural process. And we have a situation at the moment where consumers are blaming farmers for degradation of waterways, but they're not willing to pay into the price of food, the environmental costs of that food production. So we need to really start to seriously engage consumers in this process. We can have clean rivers and lakes, But what it will mean is the price of food will change.
Excellent. That does answer my question. And we've just had a tweet comment that this challenge will be accelerated under a green-driven coalition of Labor Greens in 2014. So far worse to come in the future from a tweet follower.
If I could comment on that, Erica, I think if we start to use the language far worse in the future over these sorts of issues, then we're owning the problem ourselves in entirety. The problem is not with farmers. The problem is with the whole community. The issue is being driven by the community at the moment, and unfortunately, we as farmers have kind of framed the issue as a scrap between ourselves and regional councils. We haven't framed it well, in my view, and we haven't framed it such that consumers need to understand their part in the process. And every person, no matter how green they are, eats food. And the production of food has an impact on the environment. And we need to look at it in that context rather than just blaming the green movement.
Thanks. That's helpful commentary there. So we've had some questions starting to roll in. Okay. The first one, have you tried pushing your rounds out in the growing season to allow seeding and so produce straw for trampling onto the soil surface and to get roots to scavenge deeper in the soil profile with reference to building up dry matter and soaking up some of that nitrogen?
Those are all things that we canvassed early on in the process. As I mentioned, a lot of the sheep and beef properties here were ballot farms and extensive operations, and the grass growth curve here in Taupo is all or nothing over winter, and then it all grows madly in the spring. So there was a lot of what the questioner is describing. There was a lot of that happening. Overseer rules our lives now, and Overseer treats leaching using normal farming systems and make some assumptions about your conversion rate of grass into meat and protein. But we tried a lot of those sorts of things, and certainly at the moment, Landcare Research has got a permanent lab on our farm, and they're trialling leaching under a cut-and-carry lucerne regime. So we've got lucerne established and using very deep lysimeters measuring the nitrogen leaching under that. And one of the things we're testing there is we have incorporated biochar at the rate of 10,000 kilograms per hectare into the lucerne crop to see whether the addition of inert carbon, which I guess is what your question is referring to, will have an impact. And it's a bit early to say. We've only had one winter of a four-winter trial, but the results at this stage are not statistically significant, but you wouldn't know at the end of 4 years what it would look like.
Great, thanks, Mike. So you mentioned Overseer. There's a lot of talk about the use of Overseer as a regulatory tool and whether it's fit for purpose. What are your views on this?
I was questioned by the council for the regional council under cross-examination during the Environment Court about this, and obviously had to think long and hard about my answer. In the end, Overseer is not perfect. It's still got a number of warts, and it's still got some margins of error that are possibly unacceptable. But it's the best tool that we've got. And I don't think as farmers we can afford to just keep pushing back until the perfect tool gets invented, because it's never going to be there. We have to learn to live with what's here and continually push for improvements, and any mitigation strategies that come up need to be adopted by Overseer rapidly so that they're available to farmers. But I don't think we're going to advance this discussion by constantly banging on about Overseer and how poor it is. It's not perfect. It does a reasonable job, and it will get better, I guess would be my argument.
Excellent. Thank you. You've established a branded beef product, Taupo Beef, within the domestic market, and it's packed with branded beef. Your point of difference is not so much the beef quality, more the beef story. Has this worked well, and does this point have more potential than other beef brands?
It's a work in progress, Erica, but I guess we started Taupo beef because I can't grow any more beef per hectare. According to the Beef and Lamb Economic Service, I'm in the top quintile for beef production per hectare and also beef profit per hectare from beef. So I'm basically pushing the system as far as I can go, and I'm certainly at my nitrogen discharge limit. So yet, and I'm capped at my 2004 stocking levels. Since that cap was introduced, my costs have risen 48%. So not unlike other farmers, I can't continue to intensify in order to keep ahead of rising costs. So I have to get more value for my beef rather than grow more beef. And so that's what motivated us to start Taupo Beef. We talked to the regional council and said, okay, you've imposed all these limits on us, and you audit us, and we send you monthly stock returns and a whole range of other things. Can we turn that into a brand story? And can we turn that into, if you like, an appellation for our product? Because I'd always had the view that if you'd had an American trout fisherman here spending time on the lake and he was blown away by the water quality, and then he went back to the Hilton Hotel where he was staying perhaps, and there was a story on the menu about the beef that had been produced in a way that will protect the quality of the lake for the next five or so generations, that he might be willing to pay more. So we ran a trial for 3 months back in early 2011. And to give you one example, the eye fillet that was sold at the Hilton at the time, they had a dish at $38.50. Which was high-quality eye fillet. They put Taupo beef with the brand appellation in at $42.50, which is quite a big difference here in Taupo. And it outsold over the 3 months. It outsold the conventional beef 4-1. So those sorts of results gave us the confidence to continue. And we can't keep up with demand at the moment, and we are getting a premium back to farmers. It's still a work in progress, but I would absolutely assert that consumers are willing to pay extra for food that is produced in a way that looks after water quality. You've got to make it really good quality food as well. But to answer your question, yes, I think it can work. And in a way, we don't have any other option. If we're going to impose nutrient emission caps on waterways, we can't stay in the commodity food space because we can't continue to grow our production. So we basically got to look at growing the value of it rather than growing the amount. And I do think it can happen on a national scale, and I don't think we've got any other option.
Do you have any views on how we might be able to roll something like that out at a national scale?
Yes, I do. And I've talked to a range of science providers about this issue for the last few years, and I think because all regional councils are going to be involved in this process, we could come up with a set of, if you like, protocols that could be built into statements on food, brand statements, basically telling consumers, if you like, the emissions profile of the food that they're eating. And it would be a body of work that would take a number of years. But if you look at worldwide research, most people view sustainability in terms of food production, first of all, from a water quality point of view. It's because water is something they can see, and everyone around the world can remember when they used to be able to swim in a stream, and now they can't. So if we attach a valid story that is verifiable, and it has to be verifiable, I believe that we can create value. You know, it will take time, and there will be some costs associated with rebranding our produce. But if we're serious about having conversations around protecting water quality, we've got to have another parallel set of conversations that reconfigure the farming business model. I just can't see any other way around it. And believe me, we've tried here for 12 years, pretty well everything, to look at other options. But in the end, if you're going to cap emissions into waterways, you have to add value to your product rather than increasing the amount of product. And in the end, I think we can do it.
Thanks, Mike. So an interesting question. You've got your finishing beef. Why did you not go for sheep, which have a smaller leaching profile than beef for your system?
Really good question, and that I guess that's still an option for me. The farm is set up as an intensive beef situation, so there's a lot of two and four wire fences. There would be some capital and cost involved in moving back to a lamb finishing operation. But to be quite honest, the returns for lamb have been far too volatile for me to consider putting in a system around that. We have been asked by the chefs and the retailers that we're currently dealing with to go with Taupo lamb using the same protocols and the same branding, and we would hope to start that shortly, and I'm in discussions with a number of the larger farms here in Taupo who do significant quantities of lamb. So I would hope that you're going to see Taupo lamb as well as Taupo beef, not only in the Central Plateau, but in Auckland and Wellington shortly. And then I guess the acid test is whether we can crack an overseas market with it.
Excellent. I look forward to trying some of that Taupo lamb next time I'm down there. And following on from that, a question around breeding cows. So you've got rid of yours, which obviously has implications in other catchments. Have you got any comments around that?
Well, in a cynical sense, you could say I've just transferred the problem to another catchment. But I think, well, if we look at it in a more considered way, there'll be other catchments who have different soil types and where perhaps nitrogen is not the main issue, but maybe sediment or fecal coliforms or whatever, and they can do more about that. So I think we need to start having conversations amongst regions and amongst farmers and have a situation where breeding animals are in certain catchments, fit for purpose, if you like, and they can get a really good return. I'd like to see a situation where the value that we get for our Taupo beef transmits right down the line and we pay a premium to breeders in other catchments for their weaners. And I guess it's just about us working together, both as farmers and between catchments over time. And or put it another way, cynically, if too many people go out of breeding cows, the price of weaners will go up, and then the dollars earned per kilogram of N may stack up, and we may go back into it. But I would hope that we approach it from a slightly more reasoned way than that.
Excellent. I think that's probably a good place to wrap up. So thank you very much, Mike. You've provided a lot of food for thought, pun intended, sorry,